Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
I would like to wish you a happy Devil's Night.
Oh, thank you.
And that is why we have gathered here this spoopy Devil's Night.
Mm-hmm.
And a bonus episode.
Yes.
Of John and Alex Hate Stuff. The first bonus episode, I think, other than Patreon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we should make people pay for this. We're not, though. This is going to be a...
Oh, people will pay for this.
This is going to be a Hell's Night special, or I called it Goosey Night, where I grew up.
Really?
Yep. Dumbest name ever. Don't even know what it means, but it was called Goosey Night.
Hmm.
Don't know. So we're gathered together on this, on Hallows Eve.
Mm-hmm.
The penultimate eve of the Hallows. So it's the Elder Wand, the Cloak of Invisibility, and the Resurrection Stone.
Yep.
Oh, wait, that's the Deathly Hallows. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Out of the way.
Okay. We're good?
Yep.
We watched The Crow. Hey, John, you know what time it is?
Time to not rain all the time.
No, it's time to take her home because her busy head is conscious lated.
What?
I forgot how fucking rad the soundtrack is.
Oh,
those
are
STP lyrics I was just quoting at you.
Oh, okay. I think I skipped that one because I had that soundtrack and I listened to the hell out of it, but I just, there were certain songs I skipped.
I forgot I had that soundtrack, which I cannot believe I forgot because the second, like, I don't remember what song was, I think it's an STP song. Yeah, it is because it's early on when T-Bird is driving away and they crank STP here. I go, oh my, and I had this Proustian smelling the Madeline moment of, I just had, like, I remembered half of high school.
Yeah.
Of just this, oh my God, I played the shit out of the CD. This was in my car. I owned a trench coat. I've worn face paint. Like, oh, sweet fucking Christ. This movie was a nostalgia factory. So I need just to get it out of the way now. As someone that in his late 30s still wears all black, I can't judge this film with any form of fairness. It is like my lifeblood re-injected into me.
No, I remember loving this movie, buying the graphic novel and the t-shirts or whatever.
I watched the fucking TV show, John.
But honestly, oh my God, that's right, there was a TV show. Yeah. But honestly, like I had a similar experience about it all coming back to me. But seriously, it was listening to the soundtrack and mowing the lawn. Like that's the first thing that I thought of. And I believe it was a song on the soundtrack that introduced me to Taxi Driver because they sampled the like, "I'll fucking kill you."
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it's either that or Hideaway, which was another like sort of gothy industrial kind of a soundtrack. That is awful. Jeff Goldblum movie.
I don't even think I've ever seen that movie.
Yeah.
Some thoughts completely out of order just because watching this movie, this came out in what, 94-ish?
Sure.
I was 13, 14 years old. I don't think, you know, the idea of death had really solidified. I mean, of course it did, but like, you know, it wasn't like as, you know, we're old now. So it's like, oh, I have friends that have died and they're like, yeah, you know, I wasn't that young. So, you know, I'm getting this firmer understanding. And it's weird to watch him. And it's something I kept thinking during the movie. That one, he's not a good actor.
No, he's really not.
Two, he's so charismatic at certain points that I'm kind of annoyed that I didn't get to see, because he'd be like approaching about 50 right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm annoyed that I don't get to see what a 50-year-old Brandon Lee's career would have looked like. Because, like, I think he would have turned into, I'm not saying wins an Oscar ever, but if this feels like early movies just didn't get enough training, bad acting. It's like, oh, we could have had a cool, like, he could have had weird, cool, like, Entertainment Weekly articles of, like, is Brandon Lee back? And, like, him doing, like, a poignant, you know, like, Tom Cruise and Magnolia-esque performance.
I feel like, we're just left with Lorenzo Lamas.
No, I guess they're not the same age, but I really feel like his analog is Antonio Banderas.
Oh, I think that's giving Brandon Lee way too much credit.
Really? Because, like, both think they're sexy, bad actors from about the same era.
I would argue that Antonio Banderas is a better actor.
Oh, no. 100% a better actor.
Yeah.
But I feel like Brandon Lee, because I think he was in, what, like two movies? I mean, it's not like he was
He was in, like, several, like, straight-to-video things.
Yeah. I feel like he didn't really have a chance to...
Neither did Lorenzo Lamas, though, if you think about it. He got pigeonholed in a Renegade and it's Winnem.
That's true. But, you know, Lorenzo Lamas is probably rich as fuck.
Not in spirit.
Maybe. I mean, he looked all sexy at that motorcycle. But think about how much, just how long that show played in reruns. It's probably still on right now.
I assume they just made like five episodes that they played over and over again because no one was really noticing.
That show lasted forever. It's like one of those weird shows that you're like, oh, it's been on for 20 years. It's in second place and everybody's parents, they've watched it. It's like, I've never even heard of this show.
But think about, you know, that was on around the same time as like Xena. And that still has, Xena still has like a fan base.
Yeah.
Whereas no one is clamoring for a remake of Renegade.
I bet you there's a couple of like,
yeah, Lorenzo Lamas
in trailer meetups of the Renegade fan club. So this is the Crow.
Yeah.
So here's some, early on notes. Oh, wait, no. This is so much more important. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting myself. So I know how it feels.
Oh man. Yeah.
Okay.
This must be important.
I forgot. I have something I need to read, a prepared statement. Ahem. A reading from the mini bio of Sophia Shinas, the lady that played Shelley. Since starring opposite the late Brandon Lee in The Crow, the Greek-Canadian goddess may be most recognized by moviegoers worldwide for her performance in the iconic sleeper hit. To her Canadian fans, the actress, director, and producer is most recognized for her soft voice, unassuming and accessible nature, and her talent as a multilingual singer and songwriter. You know what? I'm just going to stop there.
Greek-Canadian.
Greek-Canadian goddess. You're focusing on the wrong two of those three words.
Yeah, that's fine.
She you has know what, the Alex, word
I think all
goddess.
Women are goddesses.
Hmm? That's stupid. Your cosmology is bullshit.
Well, my cosmology is respecting women.
I'm pretty sure Neil deGrasse Tyson hosted that show and he did not respect women.
No, he
didn't. So yeah, okay. So, oh God, I just saw another one. Her music videos had garnered significant praise and attention for more than just her mesmerizing voice. She drew attention from Hollywood casting agents and much more as her male fan base, and the rest is history! Exclamation point. This is the most head stuck up the ass fucking IMDb thing I've ever read in my life.
She clearly wrote it herself, or her agent did.
The Greek-Canadian goddess. Oh, that's so fucking funny.
What is it with Canadians? You know who she makes me think of is...
Mitchell.
Not Mitchell, but Frank D'Angelo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Canadian Mitchell, I guess.
The other note from actors in this is Ernie Hudson is a national fucking treasure.
God, he's great. Like, I loved him so much at this.
He is so likable in this. And it made me rethink, like, and I wish him a long and healthy life, but he's going to be one of those people that when he passes, we're all going to be like, why did we not like him more?
Yeah.
It's going to be like an Alan Rickman thing, where a lot of people liked Alan Rickman, but I don't think everybody really realized how much Alan Rickman meant to them until he passed away. And everybody's like, no!
You know what I've been doing that a lot with recently? Peter Falk. Like, I've always like, oh yeah, no, I like Peter Falk. But like, rewatching Columbo and seeing Wings of Desire for the first time,
which is
magic. And I'm like, oh my God, Peter Falk is just fucking fantastic. And I wasted so much of my life not appreciating him.
Wings of Desire is, I'm going to say, Nick Cave's second best performance in a movie.
What was his first?
Oh, what was that Johnny Bravo movie with Brad Pitt?
Oh,
it's not called Johnny Bravo.
No, Johnny Suede.
Johnny Suede. Yeah, but I mean, he's Johnny Bravo. He's got the big pompadour hairdo.
I didn't know he was in
there. Nick Cave plays his kind of his Yoda. Like, he meets him and he's like, Nick Cave's got this big dumb pompadour, but he's the old school guy that's teaching Brad Pitt how to be the rock and roller. It's magical. The actress Shelley is our age, and it's depressing to look at her now.
There's no way she's our age.
She's exactly our age. I think she's 40.
I'm thinking of Shelley's mom.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Also, no, I'm wrong.
That's Darla.
No, I'm wrong. Sarah.
Sarah.
Sarah is our age.
Okay.
Terribly sorry. Yeah, Sarah is our age.
Yes.
For some reason, like, Shelley is the wrong name for the dead one.
Okay.
I don't know. No, it just feels like... I shouldn't even say that. I think Sarah is the wrong name for the little kid. Like, Shelley's a little kid name more than Sarah.
Yeah, but Sarah's not really a little kid. She's wise beyond her years.
Yeah,
but has been through a lot.
So this is The Crow we're talking about. And of course, with anything this upbeat and fun, it opens with a horrific rape and murder. Not that I forgot about this scene, but boy, the 90s. They still were a lot like the 70s and the 80s, huh?
Yeah.
Kind of forgot. They just
seriously dark shit. I mean, it's obviously a gothy movie called The Crow, but like...
No, but that's like fun dark.
Yeah, but
there's like real dark in this.
The villainous couple. That's when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, all right. But realizing now, like, oh my God.
Also, brother and sister.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they're half sister, but it's dark as shit.
Yeah. Kind of forgot about the whole. I mean, I remember they got killed, but I didn't really. Like, there's multiple scenes of, like, thankfully it's not like too graphic, but like, there's. Full rape scene, like point of view from Shelley, like, whoa, this is like a lot harsher than it would also made me realize, one, probably a better person than I was when I was a teenager. And two, I'm a much softer person and, you know, related thing. Yeah. Like, because when I was a kid, that wouldn't bother me. But also, it was 94, you know.
It was 94, but I think it's there's something to that, whereas I find that I get older, I have a harder time with more sexualized violence and that kind of thing. I think it's just not understanding, but having a better idea of death and what that kind of thing would mean, other than just seeing it in a...
Totally,
yeah. None of this stuff being permanent when you're a kid, just whatever, that's TV.
Yeah. And as you get older,
a lot of people.
And as you get older, you have a harder time with most Sonic the Hedgehog related materials.
That's
harder
true.
Harder time being your boner.
Yes, yeah.
Here's another thing I realized about this. I started front load with Dahl talking about the movie in any kind of order is, I think once we get to the revenge part of it, there's not a lot to talk about other than, oh, that guy died this way, that, you know, so
yeah.
You know, I want to get the overarching stuff. But what I realize is this movie is literally, it's if Death Wish, if Charles Bronson was at home when it happened.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, I mean, of course, it then got raised from the dead by a crow. But
right,
like,
yeah.
The rest of the movie is identical to Death Wish.
I'm just imagining Charles Bronson singing Cure lyrics.
You
now.
Have no idea how long I worked on trying to do like the, hey, you can't rain all the time.
It's eight over.
Yeah. Hey, Sarah, I can't be your friend anymore because I was brought back from the land of the dead. Kill me. It's not even remotely close. I spent a good 8 minutes the other night trying to do that because I'm like, there's nothing I want more than to say the quotes from this movie in a Charles Bronson voice.
Can you put me up for the night?
Oh, that was actually the exact part I wanted.
Yeah.
So here's another question about this movie. Why did he choose this voice? Like the weird throaty.
I don't know.
His, because also he doesn't do it every time he talks.
Yeah. I mean, I think is he supposed to, because it seems like with his character that he's brought back from the dead. He doesn't really understand why necessarily at first. Like, it doesn't take a whole, it doesn't spend a whole lot of time with him learning about this. He just sort of figures it out. He goes to the his apartment and like has this big psychic freak out. And like the first time he really realizes his powers is when he like jumps off the building and like lands in the alley. And then he laughs.
No. His first time he realizes it, he jumps out of the window, holds on to the window pane.
Yeah.
Swings back in the apartment, then watches his hands heal.
Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just like he tests that further. Yeah, yeah. But like that's done very efficiently. There's not a whole lot of like, I've got these powers. It's just like, all right, oh, boom, now I know. Let's move on.
Also leads into some of the best scenes in the film of him talking to Ernie Hudson, which, again, I can't stress how much of a delight he is. But him going like, and this is where I thought Brandon Lee was very charming, was like, yeah, I don't really know how it works. Like he's very little boy. So like, I don't know. Like, I didn't get like a handbook here.
Well, and I think the movie does that pretty well. And like, he has some powers that sort of just kind of show up. But I never feel like they're completely out of the blue. Like at the end when he delivers all the pain, you're like, well, no, he's actually been struggling with this the whole time. And he's been very sensitive to touching things or like experiencing things.
Yeah, so you know, he can like, take in pain.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, he can actually put it out too. Yeah. Okay. But that didn't feel like a cheat.
No. And seeing through the crow's eyes, I think it really works. Like, yeah, there, it's slow introduction. So originally he had a guy with a big kind of Odin-like hat that was his mentor that he met. It was given – wait.
Was that supposed to be Michael Berryman?
Okay, no, but also I just had to stop there because I don't remember if that was this movie or Spawn. No, I think that's this movie. Did that sound familiar to you when I just said that?
Spawn has a similar kind of character. There is like an old, I want to say there was an old like homeless guy that was sort of a mentor of his.
Yeah, no, I think it's in this movie that he was supposed to have like an old, like some guy that was the crow that teaches them how to do stuff and then they just cut it. Maybe it is Spawn. I can't believe I'm getting this movie and Spawn.
I mean, like a guy come back from the dead to...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Actually, it's the exact same movie.
It's fairly similar.
He also has like similar face.
Michael Berryman, who sort of is this famous weird-looking 80s actor. He was in Weird Science as one of the mutants. He was in The Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. In an interview with Joe Bob Briggs that was just last year, I think, he talked about being on that movie, and he's actually like a big Second Amendment hooray for guns guy and did not like the people that were in charge of the firearms on that movie and bailed out.
Oh, really? Like he saw they were doing a shitty job of it?
Yeah. I don't know the whole story behind it. I don't know if this is Monday morning quarterbacking. I don't want to speak ill of Michael Berryman. But that is something that he said. He's like, I don't want to be a part of this. And I don't know if he'd worked with those people before and had problems. But yeah, so he was like, nope, I'm out.
We should probably say it's because you and I are both in our late 30s.
Right.
to the majority of people listening, we should tell them that when this movie was being filmed, a blank went wrong, got stuck in the chamber. The second blank being fired the cartridge of the first blank, striking Brendan Lee and killing him on set.
Yes.
That's very important to us because of how old we are. But I think people 7 years younger than us probably have no fucking idea that, like there was a guy called Brendan Lee where he died making this movie.
Well, that was a huge thing.
Also, I've called them Brendan and Brandon interchangeably 7 times.
Excellent. What is it? It's Brandon.
Brandon. Okay.
And that was a huge thing because this was one of the first examples of trying to CG a character back in. And you can tell, but I think age has kind of helped that. Like with the scene where he's walking into his apartment for the first time, he's been on the roof and he's kind of shivering walking in. It's the exact same shot that they used earlier of him, but they just sort of like rotoscoped him in.
Yeah.
But like, because it all looks older now, I thought because it was like when I first saw it, I didn't notice it. But then when seeing it later, it stood out. Now I was looking for it. I'm like, oh, it actually doesn't look too bad.
That part actually looks really, I thought them fixing his death stuff looked really good. It's all the crow's stuff looked like shit. Mm-hmm. That aged very, very poorly.
Yeah.
Like that's not Spawn bad. Speaking of the worst CGI ever.
No.
But, I thought the CGI aged a lot better than I thought it was going to. Cause I was kind of like gritting my teeth as the movie was going. I'm like, oh boy, there's going to be some really gnarly CGI. But there's a couple scenes of, I don't even know what CGI, but when he was doing the kind of roof parkour, there was some funky physics stuff. And yeah. I don't know if that's rotoscope or CGI. I don't know what the technique they use, but it looked not real at all. But cool scene. Yeah. You know, great soundtrack.
Which brings me to the opening of the film, which is this very Blade Runner-esque. The reason we bring this up on Devil's Night is the whole thing centers around on Devil's Night in Detroit. In this movie, there's a lot of fires being started. Chaos reigns. The movie starts with this like going over the city, almost like Blade Runner, stuff's on fire, but it's all miniatures. And I loved that. I didn't realize that until now that seeing it this time around, that they were all just miniatures. That just made me extremely happy because you don't see that kind of physical filmmaking anymore. I mean, it exists and it's oftentimes it's very well hidden, but that sort of blatant, like, no, we're just using miniatures here.
It looked cool. It was nice. I couldn't put my finger on it, like, of what was sticking out. I'm like, is this miniatures or is it not CG? Like, there was something that was like, I think this movie sets tone incredibly efficiently.
Yeah.
And actually, plot-wise, it sets efficiently. Because, like, in the later movie, I don't know the movie so well, but the TV show and the comics, there's so much mythology.
Yeah.
And this movie is efficient in kind of everything. It even kills the right number of people. Mm-hmm. Like if the gang was one person more or one person less, I think the pacing of the movie would go to shit. But it's like, it's really this efficient kind of machine for how long it is. And it's really, I was weirdly like watching it with as much of an like objective eye as I could. I was more impressed with this film than I thought I would be, considering like, I'm guessing this was super low budget.
I mean, it's pretty
low medium.
It's early in the career of Alex Proyas, if I'm saying that name right, who went on to do the phenomenal Dark City. Like, I really love that movie.
Matrix. Yeah.
And then went to do Knowing and iRobot.
iRobot I liked.
I also like this in comparison to modern superhero movies, where everything is a cosmic threat. This is this very small story.
Yeah, there's actually no threat.
He's done when he kills the four people that killed his fiance. It's only that the top dollar and whoever his sister's name is steal his crow. Violent. Then he's got to do something.
Yeah.
You know, like he's kind of drugged back in. But it's more it's like, no, I'm getting vengeance against these guys and I'm good. Like, that's it. And I kind of like that.
No, it's nice. I also like that the threat level is not really, it's not non-existent, but I mean, it is just Death Wish, where it's like, well, if he doesn't come back and kill these guys, yeah, more people are going to suffer, but it's not like nothing changed. Like, you know, Shelley doesn't come back. Mm-hmm. Like it really is, I mean, long form way of saying it, just a revenge fantasy, but they do a good job of like making the characters awful enough. But here's part of the, does he become mortal again or vulnerable again because the four guys that raped and killed Shelley, because they were dead or because the crow got shot?
Because the crow got shot.
Okay. All right. I thought you were implying the other way. I went, ooh, that's an interesting read.
No, okay. But just that he was ready to retire. He was ready to be like, my mission is done. I'm going to go die again.
Let's say Top Dollar and Candyman weren't there. Uh-huh. They didn't exist, you know, whatever. It was just a random gang of thugs. You know, Sarah's fine. You know, basically the end piece isn't there. You think he just goes back to his grave.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's basically what happens in the comic is that because all the people, because Top Dollar's in that too, but he's just another thug. T-Bird is his main kill. And after he kills T-Bird, it's ambiguous, but it's pretty much like, yeah, no, I'm good. I killed everybody. I'm going away now.
That's sort of the read I got on him as well. But it's one of those deals of the bird getting hit was weird because it's like, well, is it because it happens at the same time that his main vengeance quest is over.
Right.
So it's like, oh, well, is it because his main vengeance quest is over? He's no longer invulnerable or because the bird gets shot. Yeah. Also, Candyman, you suck Tony at shooting. Todd. Yeah. How do you wing a bird?
By shooting it Tony Todd style.
Yeah, I guess so. But I was so excited. This is the first time I put it together that that's Candyman. And yeah. I was so happy.
He's great. Yeah. And I mean, like, there's so much of this movie that I like. The way it looks, the lighting, how like expressionistic the lighting is, how dark and just, but it's still like a very beautiful film. It's not Zack Snyder dark. It's still very pretty.
Yeah.
And yeah, like there's some great actors in here. Tony Todd, Michael Wincott is Top Dollar, is phenomenal.
Yeah, Michael Wincott is forever the bad guy from the Crow movie, and he's been in so much good stuff. Yeah.
David Patrick Kelly as T-Bird. Not since The Warriors has he been this fantastic, although I like him in most anything.
Yeah, but he's so good in this. Yeah.
He's playing a very similar character, but different enough. I didn't notice, or maybe I just didn't think about it or forgotten, all the scarring on his face. Like, he's got these two little marks on his cheeks, like something was run through his mouth, and he's got, like three scars on his forehead.
I don't think I noticed that ever before this time, too. Here's my winner, and you texted me about it as well, is that I think, in my old age, watching this movie again, I think Skank is my favorite.
Skank, yeah, I remember hating Skank.
But I kind of love him
but
now.
But I love, he is just the dumbest, most irritating person, but it makes sense that he would just be like, yeah, I'm in this life of crime. I don't know what else is going on, but
he's so great.
Yeah. This ghost gonna kill my ass next.
Oh yeah, that's so good.
Yeah,
his speeches are great. Him and T-Bird get the best speeches. T-Bird's like almost the writing in this is so crisp too. Like it's the dialogue in it is really well done. Like it's kind of naturalistic, but also kind of dumb Shakespearean.
Like the only person that cracks wise a lot is Ernie Hudson, and it makes sense for him to do it because he's kind of this cop that's like, he's seen it all, but he still chooses to be this beat cop. And so he has this kind of sense of humor about the whole thing. And then Brandon Lee has a couple of little zingers, but
yeah,
it's not a thing where everyone's got to be the fucking comic relief.
My favorite thing in there is Ernie Hudson talking to himself. It's like, I fucking hate mines. And at least he didn't do that pulling the rope thing. I hate that. Just like him diatribe about how he hates mimes is so good.
My favorite thing, and I don't think I ever really enjoyed it as much as this time around is when he's in his skivvies, like going over the case, but he's still wearing his police hat.
And then this is one of those charming things of Brandon Lee going, you know, you're still wearing your hat.
Yeah.
But again, and this is the part that I realized that when Brandon Lee's dragging on the cigarette, all of his dialogue sounded like he's holding in a cigarette hit.
Yeah.
You know, that, this awkward, whatever, you know, I shouldn't speak ill of the dead or whatever. Here's something that I noticed this time that I'm a little confused with. So people don't get buried with shoes.
Why?
Because he gets out of his grave and, well, you bury him in a suit.
Yeah.
Why? Really? No shoes? Is that a thing?
I don't know. I'm not a mortician, but it would make sense. Like, why?
Wait, what do you do during the day?
Dig up graves. I don't bury
people. Oh, I knew it was something to do. I mean, we just met. Like, I knew it was something grave related.
Yeah.
I was close. I mean, come on.
But, no, I mean, it doesn't surprise me, I guess. I didn't really put any thought into it, but...
We met, right?
No.
Okay.
Not that part of it.
Because don't let me fucking go on teeth on this movie. But in the modern parlance of saving the cat, this movie starts with him touching the cat and finding all the memories of his vicious murder.
Yes. The cat seems very well cared for, despite being a year... gone.
Yeah, living in an abandoned tenement.
But cats will do that.
Also, not to get into the fiscal structure of this film, but
please do. That's what people listen.
Well, I mean, I think so, because I mean, I do it every episode, and people still listen. So
do they?
I mean, but more than zero.
Okay,
less than enough to do anything with. By the way, you know, tell your friends. how do they make money off of burning down stuff?
I think it's not very well explained, but I took it as like a real estate scheme. I don't think it's all, some reason I want to call him Time Cop. Top Dollar I don't think it's all his people just burning stuff. I just think that's done. His scheme is done under the guise of Devil's Night.
But, so what's his scheme?
His scheme is like trying to run people out of either like being a slumlord and then trying to run people out of the buildings and then perhaps torching them for insurance money or as a real estate scheme.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd, kind of makes sense, but it feels like they're just kind of doing crime.
I mean, I'm putting too much thought. The movie is like, yeah, because they're bad. Mm. Like that's basically all you need to know.
Yeah, the hero shot in the beginning, where after he gets all of his clothes and stuff together, mm-hmm. and then they're playing The Cure.
Yes,
and he's posing in the window. It's like I can't. This movie, I'm powerless to this movie
because
this is great. And you know what we should do is just this whole episode, just play fucking 90s songs just underneath it.
Yeah.
And just because how much better would our show be?
But like, I mean, thinking about it this way, like seeing it when I was a kid, really caught up in it, loved it. But now I'm just like, he wouldn't, if he's this much of a goth dude, like he wouldn't do anything. He would just like paint his face and stare out the window looking sad.
Yeah. Like I gotta be honest with you here. This is a problem I've had with the film for a long time. One of the few problems, because as a mopey goth kid,
uh-huh.
and as someone with a degree in poetry, what I would do is write gothy poetry about what happened to me. Tintin, and I think you'll agree with me here,
mm-hmm.
one worst character of the villains.
Yeah, weakest. I mean, and I think, yeah, I don't think they gave him much to do, and it was killing me that I could not tell what I knew that actor from.
Is it something Joss Whedon...
No, and because that isn't to say that he's not in any Joss Whedon. The actor's name.
Well, it's just he reminds me of a Joss Whedon character, but he would be a hero in that his jacket, his knives.
Would he be a hero or would he be? I mean, because I guess what I'm thinking of is the guy from Serenity, the yet another well spoken assassin, which they did in the show. Whatever. I don't want to sit here and shit on Firefly. I do, but I shouldn't.
There was a well-spoken assassin in Firefly?
In Serenity, he's the guy that's after them.
Oh, yeah, you know, in Serenity. I thought he meant in Firefly.
But I think in Firefly, I want to say there was, like, the exact same character. It's been so long since I've watched the show.
You know, me too. That's I don't
remember. But it's also since Joss Whedon has about, like, four or five characters.
But, but this guy seemed like, and it we're just kind of narrowing in on it.
Yeah, but he, I know him from True Romance. And it's, like, a tiny, tiny role. Very beginning of the movie, he and Samuel Jackson... possibly on credit, I'm not sure, meet Gary Oldman, and Gary Oldman shoots them and takes their cocaine money that later Christian, what's his face?
Bale.
Christian Slater
absconds
with.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was Floyd in that. But Lawrence Mason is the actor, and he was Tintin.
Yeah, he didn't have enough to do.
No, but like I do like the scene when we're introduced to them outside of murdering Eric Draven and his girlfriend. They're in a bar eating bullets and drinking, like they're putting a bullet on their tongue and then doing a shot.
I've heard of sweating bullets, but come on, people.
But eating bullets.
I was trying to do that Scott Aukerman horrible fucking anti-comedy.
No, it was horrible. You got there.
Yeah, but it sounded like I was being serious. And now I feel like people are going to think I was actually trying to make that joke, not make fun of that joke.
But yeah, they're trying to one-up each other in the bar. And I just love that the waitress, Shelley's mom, Darla, he's like, hey, put the guns away.
Yeah.
Like, can we just not tonight? Like, this is just a regular occurrence, and I'm just going to calmly try to defuse it. I don't know. That just made me laugh how absurd that was.
Oh, no, it's true. Their interactions are great. And also, which of the gang does she fuck?
Fun Boy.
Her and Fun Boy, where she's like, there's a fucking bird in the room. Like, them just being high off their tits at fun times. But, he kills Tintin, and the second death is, I think, my favorite scene in the movie, which is that great character actor that runs the pawn shop. I don't know his
John
name.
John Polito.
I'm glad
this might have been the first movie I saw with him in it.
He's been in so much stuff. He's probably been in a Star Trek. Like he's one of those guys that's a workman. Like
shit on me. He's so great.
Shit on me. It's so good. Shit on me.
Giddy
shit
in
on
the
me.
Pawn store.
We'll get that. But so outside the pawn shop, Eric Draven is knocking on it, and he's like, rap, tap, tapping, tapping at my chamber door. What is that? Okay, dude, that's the wrong member of the family Corvidae. That is a raven. You're a crow.
Yeah. Got
bullshit.
His ass.
Yeah. Also, your last name is Draven. It's got the word raven in it. Why is this not called the Raven?
Because it's the same thing.
You know why? Big ABC, because there's already a show called That's Raven. That's why.
That's so Raven.
Yeah. Whatever. Also,
is that gasoline I smell?
Yeah.
Was she a great big fat person?
he's got a Buffalo Bill per day. Yeah. A
little bit.
I'd fuck me.
I do like that bit though when he goes in there and he basically punishes the pawn shop owner for accepting stolen goods. And being a part of this, which I kind of like. It's not specific to his revenge quest, but I still kind of like that. But the whole thing of he goes to find his wedding ring or the engagement ring that he can tell just by touching it. And I just like that he puts the other ones in the shotgun. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a neat visual of him firing all the rings out. But
if this movie was set today. How fucked he'd be if he touched an iPhone and he just sees like child miners in Africa getting the raw ore for the components. Be like,
Oh, fuck. Yeah, he has to confront his role in capitalism.
I have to get on a plane. I can't actually fly.
This makes me think the whole touching the ring to see the flashbacks of his wife and or soon to be wife. Is it? Yeah, Shelley is one of those characters that. She's not really a character. She's just a smiling, pretty lady.
I mean, the only way she could be more that character is if she was put in a fridge. Like, she is the ultimate fridge, the girlfriend. Like, it is – there is nothing there. And also, a pet peeve of mine in film, and TV is actually more a bigger offender of this, is the flashbacks where they're laughing over nothing to show how great their relationship is. And it's like – Unless they're on like fucking, you know, unless they've been huffing something, you're not going to go like, I walked into the room and you were already there. It's like that thing with the ladies laughing at salads in ads.
Right. Yeah.
They're such drama queens. Like it is.
They're
like,
awful theater kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just them having the tragedy mask. And what's his band's name? The Hangman's.
Hangman's Joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But I love him killing – well, not killing, nearly killing the pawn shop guy.
Mm-hmm.
And him as the messenger to Top Dog is so great because it's the one guy in the movie that can kind of deliver the news in a way that Top Dog might be – like because all of his underlings are smacked out idiots.
Yeah.
This guy's like, I don't give a fuck. I just want money.
Yeah.
And him going like, no, there's a guy in face paint. Like this is fucked up.
Yeah. It was nice to have that. Voice of realism, for lack of a better word, I guess. He's just this is dumb as hell, but this guy fucked me up. Like, this guy attacked me, and he's painted up like a crow, and he did some weird shit, but I don't know, where everyone else is, this kind of smacked out super goofball, he's still just, he seems like a regular-ass pawn shop owner.
Yeah, he's kind of great in this. This leads into, I forgot. Now that I have my notes in front of me. Move and you're dead. Well, I say I'm dead and I move.
Uh-huh.
Some of the Eric quips I kind of love, but don't work with the character at all.
I disagree. Because he's an obnoxious theater kid, I could see that happening.
Okay. All right. You're taking it that way. Yeah. Okay.
Like, imagine anyone in a Reddit comment thread.
Yeah.
Being the crow and like, they'd make these same jokes. I mean, now there would be more memes or whatever, but... I get that.
I can
has not being shot or whatever.
The other terrible thing about him that just we need to go over for maybe like 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the worst thing we've seen in the 60-something movies we watched on the show? Him guitar soloing on the roof of buildings.
I remember even being a kid being like, okay... what are we doing here?
I remember it being a little cringy when I was young, but I loved the movie so much. So I'm like, I can kind of look past it. But one, I forgot there's two of them.
There's two of them. And it's like, don't you have anything better to do?
And then the second one is even worse, where he smashes the guitar. Because I think there's nothing more impotent looking than when a rock star tries to smash their guitar and it doesn't break on the first try.
Uh-huh.
So like you smash and you see, like, obviously it's done some damage, but the neck didn't break. It just looks like... Oh, wow. You know, the 115-pound rock star guy didn't break it. Like, it just looks like this. There's no rock.
But it's also, what is that scene supposed to do? Because, like, we know he's
also,
angry.
Also, where did he get the amp?
He's probably in the house. Angry and frustrated. He's a murder machine. Like, why do I need this additional scene of him struggling with that? You know what I mean? Like, his whole existence is pain. I don't need this to show me.
And he's
me
also
that.
Playing like way too complex of guitar. Like I could see him playing like wailing, like long, slow kind of mm-hmm. like agonizing notes. But
not
he's doing like
Dragon Force.
Yeah,
or
he's
whatever.
Doing like yeah. Eddie Van Halen, like like this is.
Hey, old habits die hard.
Apparently not. All you need to have is a guitar crow to come back. And do you think Eddie Van Halen's tongue got its own crow?
I read this little.
That might be the worst thing I've ever said on the show.
I read this little thing about Eddie Van Halen where he was convinced he was getting cancer because he would keep like metal guitar picks in his mouth.
Yes, I read that too.
Yeah, they're like, no, you were smoking a ton. He's like, nah, it's the guitar picks.
I've done my fair share of cocaine in my life. I haven't in, I don't know, a decade. Like, not because I quit, because it's a young man's thing. Mm-hmm. More than a decade, probably. Top Dog has the most coke I've ever seen in my fucking... That is a Scarface amount of coke.
I was
going to
say, haven't you seen Scarface? Because that is a...
It is... No, but Scarface is like... His character is meant to be laughable. Like, his whole thing is being over the top and ridiculous. Top Dog seems like a... Not a grounded character, but like a... That person could exist in real life.
Sure.
That amount of coke on a tray cannot exist in real life. Yeah. That is fucking absurd.
So, yeah, Top Dollar being this
Did I call him Top Dog?
You did.
Okay.
But he's being this sort of like crime boss. Him and it is Bai Ling.
Bai Ling, yeah. Early Bai Ling, weirdly enough, very subdued Bai Ling for Bai Ling standards.
For Bai Ling, yeah.
I know what I'm saying there. I mean, watch any of the Crank movies. This is a subdued Bai Ling.
This is Nicholas Coppola Bai Ling.
Yeah. Also, I forgot how huge of a crush I had on her. Rewatching this movie, we were like, oh, yeah.
I have never liked her in this movie, and that stays true.
I just think she's incredibly foxy.
I'm sure she's an attractive lady, but she was just so weird. But there was a moment specifically, because her character has this whole thing with eyes and cutting out eyes. When we're first introduced to them, they have just had some kind of coke sex party with some woman, presumably a prostitute. That she then like goes to cut out her eyes. My favorite part, Top Dollar later, is having a meeting with all these other crime guys. I think this might be right before Eric Draven shows up. But they're talking, and she just goes, "I like the pretty lights."
Oh yeah, yeah.
And everyone is like, "Okay,
yeah."
And I didn't realize that like when it cuts back to her, and she's like, "Should I not have said that?"
Yeah,
like it's. I never got that kind of joke. I was more just like, that's kind of a weird, stupid thing to say. But the fact that everyone is like, damn, you're weird. And not in a, like, I'm afraid of you way. It's more just like, yeah, okay. You're still here.
Yeah, I kind of love her in this. But boy, she, awkward. But I like her eye obsession also. And not to get too, because I don't even think that the person that wrote this really thought about it. No. I think the writer probably saw comic booking nerdy, probably did think about it. But the whole, Odin one eye thing of Odin, you know, having two crows or ravens, one pokes out his eye and that's how he gets the knowledge and her knowing that. I don't know. There's a lot of kind of touches of mythology enough to make it like not to give it depth, but to like kind of waft depth over the top of it. Where it's just like, yeah, if you don't think about it that much, there's the full, you know.
Sure. Well, it's also the sort of thing of like, well, we need to have this sort of mystic character. Let's have an Asian person do it. You know what I mean? Like, if we want to have someone that's like inscrutably knows this stuff.
Yeah.
Let's make her exotic and she'll just be Asian.
Best line in this film. One of my crew got himself perished.
Yes.
And that's the reason I love the writing in this. It is Deadwood level, ridiculously precise of like, no human talks like this, but motherfucker, this is great. Also, who's Swearingen?
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane. Ian McShane would fit in this movie perfectly.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know where, but Ian McShane could be like just drop him in the middle of a scene and be like, "Yep, that's
Ian McShane as Top Dog would be pretty rad." Clearly that speech, the speech he gives at the
end. If they remake this movie, Ian McShane as Top Dog would be Top Dollar. I'm just gonna call him Top Dog.
Whatever.
Who cares?
Yeah,
yeah.
Crow was on to kill Fun Boy. Who's a heroin? No, they're addicted to morphine. Him and Sarah, who used to hang out with his dead wife, this 12-year-old that hung out with this couple.
We just skipped an important dumb part.
What's that?
Where he saves Sarah from getting hit by a car.
Yeah,
that is this girl is a tough streetwise kid, mm-hmm. and just to fucking further the plot, he has to save her from hitting girl. Sorry.
No, they just had to have the, like, a meet cute sort of thing.
Yeah, it just
like
bothered the shit out of me, yeah. and that happened slightly before the part you're getting to. Please continue. Yeah,
but
just,
he say, which I was, I liked, when Sarah confronts her mother at the bar and she's making out with Fun Boy and they're all high. Just the way.
Oh yeah.
The way they kind of brush her off. To me, it felt somewhat like not absurd that the mom would be that way towards her daughter. You know what I mean? Like,
no, it worked. Yeah, it's not one of those scenes where it's like, obviously the mother's in a bad situation, but it's not one of those things where she's like under sway, where she's there out of protest. Or it's like, no, this lady's fucked up life. It's not just like, oh no, there's this golden goddess mother that's under the sway of this evil gang. Where it's like
Creek Canadian.
No, she's just like this fucked up lady, and she happened to have a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, and. So then the crow gets them when they're super fucked up in his pad. And that was, again, a moment that I liked where he, when he kills Fun Boy and Fun Boy's like, oh, you're getting blood all over the sheets. It didn't seem like quippy, like, yeah, it just is like, I'm super high and I'm reacting to.
Yeah, I like it. And it just goes back to the point of I think the dialogue in this is really well written, mm-hmm. of him going like my leg and him like kind of gesticulating, you ruined my sheets. It's not like a fun joke. It's him being high as fuck and actually truly being concerned about the welfare. But how do you feel about the and I loved it at 14, the Jesus goes into the three nails.
Oh yeah, joke. It was a funny joke. I mean, like, it's a dumb joke, but
we're okay with that, because like I'm on the fence of like, I feel like the writers of this film might actually think that's like a legit edgelord funny joke.
This was the 90s. I mean,
good point.
For a guy in the flyover states, that was, oh damn, that's crazy that you're making a Jesus joke.
Yeah, damn. I forgot. I grew up in the Go-Go East Coast,
Go-Go Jersey.
Just going to Christopher Street and hanging out
with Christophers. But I think, but I think like not the internet not really existing and me not having access to.
No, you're right. Okay. Like,
yeah. At the time, I think it still was edgy.
Now, how about this? Wait, let me smoke my cigarette.
Mother is the name of God on the lips of all the hearts of all children.
Yeah. That might be the worst line in any movie ever made.
When I was a kid, I was like, wow.
Now, it's kind of cool when it's 14, but...
But, yeah, now oof. it's like, that's your... And she's like, oh, you know what it is? I'm going to stop doing morphine. You know,
I took that as a crow power.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like he sucks the pain out of her.
Yeah.
But I also like that... So following that, the next day, she's cooking breakfast for her daughter, Sarah, who's like, what the fuck is this? And the mom's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Fuck this. That it's not just this, like, I'm fine now. I'm okay now. Yeah. It's that, like, there's still work to be done.
Yeah, she's just not hooked on the stuff.
Yeah. And like, even though it is a comic book movie, that was still, I don't know.
No, it's not.
There was still a human element to it that I liked.
The aspect of that was weird. And I don't, you know, I didn't do a lot of hard drugs in the 90s. I did a lot of soft drugs. But did people not do heroin back then?
Oh, people did heroin in the 90s.
And why was she on morphine?
Don't know. I mean, people did morphine too, I guess.
I thought morphine was like more of a modern, like once you could like fake prescriptions kind of.
I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I like that interaction with her trying to figure out what kind of eggs she likes. Because yeah, it is like all the crow did was basically get her not addicted, but she's still the same kind of fucked up person that got addicted in the first place.
Yeah, or be like, had this very one-man intervention.
So after he kills Fun Boy is where he goes to Ernie Hudson's apartment with the wonderful hat scene.
Mm-hmm.
Great interaction, him talking about his ex-wife. Is the foxy lady at the precinct his ex-wife? The one that gives him the file?
Good question. I don't know.
All right. Doesn't really matter. It seemed like it. But their interaction's great. Ernie Hudson having figured out who he is by drawing on the police file. Mm-hmm. They're like, I love all this. But my favorite part of this is, what, are you going to go disappear right now? In a very Batman thing, you know, where Jim Gordon would look and go, oh, he does this all the time. Which he actually does, the Batman disappearing joke later. And again, one of those charming moments, badly acted, but it's like, fuck, this guy could have been something.
Yeah.
Is Brandon Lee going, I thought I'd use your front door.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, oh, that's fucking adorable. This movie's great.
Speaking of...
Let's only watch The Crow from now on. Speaking of bad actors, Alex likes Crow. Jalk.
Speaking of bad actors,
Osama bin Laden.
Yes. Marco Rodriguez, who plays Torres, who's like the higher up to Ernie Hudson's Archibald character.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The pockmarked detective.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Dime Store Edward James Olmos.
Yeah, he was pretty rough. And like his, yeah. But I mean, like his character is also just there to be like, you're a dumb cop, I'm a good cop, and then leave. Just so later Ernie Hudson can be like, turns out I'm the good cop.
Oh, no, I have a completely different read. I thought he's the uber corrupt cop.
Whenever, what, where did you, I don't remember the corruption.
Because I think he demoted, Ernie Hudson because he was looking into Draven's shit from last year. I thought he was in the pocket of Top Dollar.
No, Ernie Hudson was like, didn't like doing that level of stuff, like being on the street.
Oh, I have a very different read because they make a reference of him looking into the Draven thing when he was told to stop, and that's why he got busted
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it was he was trying to be hero cop, and then he cut rate Edward James Olmos was in the system. He was in the pocket of the villainous people, that's why he keeps getting Ernie Hudson in trouble every time he looks into something.
Oh, see, I don't. That doesn't sound familiar at all.
Well, John, I watch a lot of Rick and Morty, so I'm much smarter than you. Right. I think I read into like that's the subtext. I'm like a super genius. I'm like a guy from Mars.
Yeah, I'm like a guy that gets pissed at McDonald's if they don't have a certain kind of sauce.
I have a giant head. I wear all black, so obviously I'm from Mars.
I'm Goth Sebastian Gorka.
Sorry, I just laughed at my own note. It's not my joke.
Yeah.
But so the next death in his list of deaths, he goes up to Cheebird and Skank, and at one point Skank calls someone an ass hair.
Yes.
I literally just saw the term ass hair and started giggling.
Yeah.
What a brilliantly stupid thing to call somebody.
You know, like Skank and T-Bird is kind of like George and Lenny from, but like Gone Dark. Whereas like I can see Skank just being like, whatever. And he's easily just like, go kill that person. He's like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But except in this case, George is even dumber. Like,
yeah.
I love the this scene. So Eric kind of kidnaps T-Bird while Skank is in the store. And Skank freaks out, beats the shit out of some guy, steals this like tiny little like weird go-kart kind of car, and starts this absurd police chase, which is gorgeous.
Yeah. What I also like is that every time – I mean it's every time. It only happens really twice, but with Tintin and T-Bird is when they are clearly in a position where – The crow has got the better of them. They're still just like, yeah, we killed these people. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know,
stop admitting to stuff.
Yeah, I would totally be like, I don't know nothing about it.
Yeah. I, what are you talking about? I moved here 6 months ago. I'm from Bethesda, Maryland.
But T-Bird in particular, like, so he gets taped up to his car, like duct taped to the seat. And the crow drops a grenade in his lap.
Oh, wait, before, hold that thought. Drops a grenade, but you miss a really, a lovely bit of dialogue where he realized who the crow was, and he goes, this is the really real world. There ain't no coming back.
Yeah.
His moment of existential, like, fucking realization of, like,
this really is real. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, and David Patrick Kelly just does that so well because it's this insane rambling almost, but it is a legitimate realization of being confronted with this insane thing.
Yeah, which is, I think, the way you would react to it. It's like, this is impossible. Anyway, so it drops a grenade.
So he drops a grenade and like, he's kind of lamenting having done it because he's re-reciting some Fiery the Angel Fell or what, I think it was like a Milton passage or something like that.
Yeah, also, her name being Shelley, that's another problem.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah. But yeah, and then like, I always thought this was so cool. Launches the car off and it blows up in midair, driving into a lake or something.
Very nice scene.
Good death.
And I have a question for you that I wrote towards myself. Eric waved, which is great, where he does the really queen wave at T-Bird flying off to be explode. Delightful again, charismatic. Then I wrote crow fire. Do I like that? I think I do. Where he makes the crow symbol
back in the day. Hell yeah. Now I'm like, who's that for, Eric?
Yeah. Also, he's not an artist. He's a guitarist.
Well, that's a kind of art.
No, that's fine. I'm not taking away from
the artist.
From the X-Men ship.
Uh-huh.
I'm not taking away from his sweet licks.
Uh-huh. Please don't.
But it's just weird that he could like freehand draw in naphtha on an already wet ground.
He's an artistic crow soul.
For no one to see.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be. It's like in Breath of the Wild.
I'm very excited to see where this is going.
Thank you. I'm glad. Because as I said that, I hope people are excited how deep I'm going here. But where Link, I don't know how much holder I could hold back Calamity again. And you're like, yeah, but I have to collect 50 Swift Shrooms to sell to this guy so I can get the horse at the good stable so I can find some more ore because I have to do a marriage ceremony on an island.
Right.
And meanwhile, she's holding back the forces of evil with all of her might. I just imagine him, he's in this revenge fantasy going, I'm going to draw a bird on the ground with kerosene.
Well, maybe that's who he's thinking. He's like, this one's for you, buddy. Big ups to the crow. They brought me back. Because maybe the last couple... Because the Tintin, when he killed him, there was the... He painted the crow on the wall.
Yeah, which...
But did he do anything to Funboy? I don't recall if he did. Because in the comic, I remember... I feel like he drew it on his chest or something.
Yeah, I think he put the needles in and like a crow
so I think fashion. It's I think it's that. I think it's him just like, big ups. Point to heaven.
Yeah, but I mean, shouldn't he draw a picture of Shelley?
Shelley didn't bring him back. The crow did. So it's him thanking the crow.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
I mean, the love of Shelley, the love for Shelley, I guess. But the crow used that to bring him back.
Yeah.
I mean, the mythology is not really well explained. It's more just like, sometimes if you need to come back, a crow will do that for you.
Yeah, okay. No, I mean, especially having watched the later films and the TV show, it's up there with Highlander in the, and kind of quality-wise, almost exactly mirroring
which
Highlander.
Which don't watch the later films in the TV show?
Yeah, exactly. But also the mythology gets just as deep, and you can kind of get hooked on it. Except if you take a moment's pause to step and go, oh, I'm watching the Highlander, and go, oh, what am I? Oh, I'm gonna go outside.
Yeah,
I can like see the sun and hug people and like have interaction. Like, right. I could do anything.
I could have a Big Mac.
I could stare at a wall.
Yeah.
Like anything is better. But if you don't notice yourself, the next thing you know, it's 2 years later, you've watched every episode of the Highlander and the spinoff series, which I don't remember the name of. There's a spinoff Highlander series called like Highlander, like the Crow or the Raven or something like that. Boy. It was something close to this. Yeah. Oh, you know, we're actually getting to kind of basically the end set piece is, I think this is where the board meeting of the bad guys happens.
Yes, because Devil's Night is about to happen, and so they have a big...
Goosey Night.
Yeah, no. They have a big meeting about it.
So I like the scene for a number of reasons. One, who the fuck are these other people? the other criminal empire in town? It's cool. I have nothing to say about the scene. Well, I regret bringing it up.
No, well, I kind of like it because...
say something interesting.
Well, it's sort of what I was talking about earlier, where it being this small movie in terms of like these guys that Eric Draven is after, killing is just like a tiny part of this guy's whole operation. Like it's still enough for him to get interested and irritated, but it's like you just kill his janitorial staff.
Yeah.
And he's not happy about it. But it's so much more than that. And it's not even like him. Well, wait a minute. I think I might have just undermined my whole point because they don't him attacking. Why does he attack Top Dollar then?
Because Skank is there.
That's what it is. Okay, thank you.
He tells him, I'll let all of you live if you just give me that guy.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I forgot about that bit.
And also we missed the best. Sorry. One of the best scenes of the movie is who plays Top Dollar?
Michael Wincott.
So Michael Wincott, when Skank is doing the, and then he was over here and he's doing the same man. And Michael Wincott has his hand over his mouth, stifling laughter.
Yeah.
And I can't tell if it's the actor. I can't tell if it's Michael Wincott doing that or Top Dollar doing that.
Right.
Either way, it is a brilliant thing to be in that scene of him stifling. You see his cheeks moving of how amused this is to him.
I mean, his character is dark enough that he would find this sad flailing man telling the story about his best friends dying hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, especially it's going back and forth, being like, no, he went over here, man. The guy, he's got face paint. He's like, fire it up.
His ghost's going to kill my ass next.
Yeah. Oh, his ghost's going to kill my ass next is beautiful. Yeah. I have that tattooed on my back in Elvish.
So then Branley shows up during the meeting. He's like, yeah, just give me Skank. And they won't. So this, for a long time, I thought was the coolest scene.
It's a cool scene.
Yeah. The fight upstairs happening. My life with the thrill kill cult. is playing downstairs.
Is that who's downstairs? I couldn't figure out who the fuck. Well, not
it's the,
couldn't
it's
figure
the
it out.
Only
I
put, song of theirs that I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking love it. And it's one of those that I've never bothered to learn the words to. The words in my head don't make any sense. Yeah. But goddamn it, those are the lyrics to the song. But yeah, it was just flashing lights and him flipping around shooting people. It's great.
Yeah, there's a kind of power move when he walks in, one hand's onto a table into sitting cross-legged.
Uh-huh.
And if Bill Gates did that, he would own the world. Like, I mean, that is a power fucking move. One hand onto a table directly into sitting cross-legged.
That's how Mark Zuckerberg starts every day.
Yeah. Well, that's how Trump got elected, actually. Yeah. A big shootout happens. He wins and then throws Skank
out of a window.
Out of the window, down onto the floor of the dancing goth club.
Mm-hmm.
And they scatter and run away, which feels like the movie that we're watching, that crowd would cheer and the band would keep playing.
No, because they're innocents. They're just there for the good times.
No, they're in like the middle of the worst city ever.
Yeah, but they're not. I mean, they're not evil souls. This isn't Morton Joe's people. Like they're just regular ass people.
Morton Joe,
the guy from Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, that sounds like a steakhouse to me. Yeah, like, no, I don't know what the fuck a Morton Joe is.
I only went with that because it came to me before Lord Humongous.
No, that's fine. Lord Humongous, I would have understood. Or even Master and/or Blaster.
This is more Master more than Blaster.
Yeah, but you know, hey, look, to each their own. I'm not going to argue with you. This leads us to the climactic end battle at the graveyard. Sarah gets kidnapped by Candyman.
He's going to say his goodbyes because his mission's completed. But then they figured out because Tony Todd's character has been scoping out the crow.
Tony Todd is Candyman, who I'm going to refer to as that. I just want to tell the audience because I will not change my language for him.
And they they figure, and like through Byling's also kind of like crazy spiritualism, know that the crow's his power. So they make this kind of thing to try to get the actual crow. Top Dollar wants a payment for killing his people, fucking up his operation a little bit, and then murdering everyone else. That seems like more what Top Dollar is really reacting to than the loss of these idiots.
Yeah, and I think Top Dollar is so powerful in his own mind that he's like, ooh, something like, I want to kill this. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, he says as much in the speech later, but so they do this. They have this whole thing. Yeah, they kidnap Sarah. They get to the rooftop, shoot the crow. So Brandon Lee is much more vulnerable. There's actual stakes in this movie now.
Yeah, and it's fun when Ernie Hudson shows up. He's like, well, I'll just walk behind you, and you'll take over. He's like, yeah, bad news. Oh, there's a great reaction when Brandon Lee gets shot, and he looks, and he goes, oh, fuck. when he looks at his head and there's blood on it, that's fun.
Yeah, it just stops
fun little
working.
Bit of business. Yeah.
Yeah. But so then they have this rooftop fight scene. And I just love this moment where Michael Wincott has sort of bested him for the time being and just gives this whole speech about like, well, yeah, you know, you really fuck shit up. But if it makes you feel any better, I had a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This was a good time for me.
My only problem with that scene is this. Why not just keep shooting him?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Why have a samurai just have?
Because I think he likes the thrill of it.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like
it's the James Bond thing. Why not just shoot him?
Yeah,
like,
it's so. But I mean, nice little fight. The two times somebody falls off a building in this, very bad CGI. Like, oh boy, does that look like shit?
Yeah, but man, this is the thing, and it's funny because I was trying to remember what this was fairly recently, so I was very excited when this actually happened. When Michael Wincott, Top Dollar, finally gets flung from the roof of the building, and he falls and he lands on a gargoyle with horns that gores him, and then all his blood is pouring out of the mouth,
yeah,
like in torrents. It is just a waterfall of blood, and it's shown very, very quickly. But that is so like gory Italian horror bullshit.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's awesome.
It.
It's, I mean, also better in a comic book probably, but yeah, that was fucking beautiful. We missed the climactic end is Eric is bested and then he I give you pain.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And he gives the pain that
Shelley felt.
Well, no, it's that Ernie Hudson had saved because he sat with Shelley for 30 hours after she was raped and beaten before she died. So he having touched Ernie Hudson, passes this along, which, nice little device, but It's fine. I don't want to be nitpicky.
It's a thing I think that he could, because as I mentioned earlier on, like he's able to sort of glean these things through touch, that him, rather than his own power, using Shelley's pain to best the bad guy is a neat little touch. For like, as bad as this movie treats Shelley, like as being like, no, she's just this thing that hurt. It is still a little bit more interesting than rather than just like, I'm going to kill you for her.
And then he goes over to the grave. Shelley shows up. Shelley looks remarkably I do it all the time. Shelley. Shelley shows up at the grave. The vision of Shelley shows up at the grave.
Oh, right, yeah.
I got it right that time, fucko. And she looks like Natalie Dormer a lot in that scene. And it kind of threw, it was like, holy fuck, that's fucking weird. Like, that could be your mom. Like, it's really, and they disappear together. And this is the one, like, if I could change one thing about this movie is his grave is now no longer, like, dug up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they show, like, in this really bad, what do you call when you fade between two shots?
A fade?
No, but
dissolve.
Like.
Dissolve?
No, but like when like the grave is an open pit and then it like kind of is it just fades to the top? Is there a better term for that?
Dissolve, fade.
Okay, no, I thought there was like a special effects term for like how that looks like the shitty slow replacement. But did we really need that?
Yeah.
Like that's.
I mean, I think the idea is he's at peace now, but it's a little
because especially like this movie is so like. Although it's supernatural, it is grounded. Like, there's rules to the supernatural stuff. But having, just now the dirt's back. Like, it's weird to me.
Yeah. It was an unnecessary touch. But I get what they were going for, but yeah.
And, where he was doing the whole Klaatu Vrata Nictu, and he can't pronounce it right, and then there's another Brendan Lee, and then they both accidentally shoot each other and both die.
No thanks.
And then there's four Brendan Lees, and then they turn into Itchy and Scratchy. And
yeah.
Go
through all the things you liked as a kid.
That was The Crow.
Yeah.
This movie's fucking rad.
It's still fun. Yeah. It's still, it shows its age a bit, but it's still a quality watch, I'd say.
What do you think, I wanted to ask this early on, but I didn't. Let's live in an alternate reality where you and I had never seen this movie before.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think we would react to this now? Like, watching it this year, I found out about this hidden gem that no one's ever heard of called The Crow.
I would, there would probably be a lot more sort of begrudging acceptance because I'm so right now.
Because you're so right now. Yeah. Well, you're making a MAGA.
I'm so at this moment inclined to dislike superhero movies because I'm just tired of them. But I still think this is a nicer take on one. Much in the same way that sort of the first season of any of those maybe not Iron Fist, but the Netflix superhero ones were a little bit like grittier and smaller stories. So I like those a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to figure, I think beyond the soundtrack, I think I would really like it. I think the soundtrack, although I love it because of, how old I am and watching this movie, I think it'd pull me out a lot watching it now for the first time. Be like, oh God, this is watching a movie from the 70s where every song is so fucking 70s.
Right.
Where if you didn't obviously you and I never watched it in the 70s. Yeah. It's like, ew, this is.
Well, it's funny going back and watching David Lynch's Lost Highway.
Yeah.
It wasn't until this rewatch, I'm like, this thing is so 90s, which for the purpose of the movie, makes total sense. But oh my God, I forgot how 90s it was. Like there's Marilyn Manson songs and there's a Rammstein song in there and you're like, oh my God. So that took me out a little bit. Whereas this one, I guess maybe going into it, I knew about all the gothiness of it. And so I was ready to celebrate it.
Yeah. Well, and I do celebrate it. So Trenchcoat's up, The Crow. It's fantastic. This was a bonus episode.
Yeah, so we don't need to talk about what we're watching next.
Yeah, no.
That was on the last episode. So whatever, listen to the Hereditary episode, and we'll tell you what we're watching next time.
Exactly. Bye.